Good evening, James McKenney here with my Science Hour, March 15, 2018, and a little bit of change of gears here. There are so many really, really great people doing political commentary and things like that, that most of them are a level above me as far as what they know. I have a good historical knowledge of things like that. But I have to put my time and energy into what I'm succeeding at right now, and that's the wing generator. So tonight I have a whole list of topics somewhat related. But anyway, I'll quick read them off. I'm going to talk about the Tesla charging stations for automobiles. And there's a little bit about archaeology, some discoveries in Spain. I'll talk about the Tesla Hyperloop and the batteries, the Tesla batteries. So those are all related to energy. And then a little story here about a German town that takes back its grid. So if you heard me on the Power Hour yesterday, where I was a guest every month, I'm a guest on the second Wednesday of the month. And so that was the topic they're dealing with, who owns the grid? And so that's a major question. I'll talk about tonight earth-friendly homes. And I have a picture on my webpage. I encourage you to go there, jmccsci.com, and take a look at that. And that'll lead into a whole topic here, very interesting, one of my favorite topics. I love to see these eco-earth houses where they're built into the side of a hill. Remember the movie The Hobbit? I'm sure you all saw that. And The Lord of the Rings, I guess, was the official name of the movie. But the Hobbitville was, these houses were built into the side of a hill and had cute little round doors and round doorknobs and very homey, very warm. And anyway, why aren't we living like that? Even if you lived in the desert, if you had a little rise, you could dig back in there. You'd have very nice and cool and collected, and just fix it up nicely, have dirt over the top for an insulation. And then you could put grass up there and have, I love these pictures in it was like Switzerland, in the summertime, the goats would be up on the roof eating the grass off the roof to keep it mowed. And also, somebody sent in a video about Japan and China, which was just really encouraging also, except at the end they're talking about in those countries they're doing human gene experimentation. And let me tell you, that gets a little bit scary. That's kind of like often kind of Never Never Land that I don't think we should be dealing with. But these countries, they don't have rules and regulations that vision that, that's a purity that we should not violate. That's opening up a Pandora's box. But many other things they were talking about, saltwater agriculture, a rice they've developed that grows in saltwater. What an amazing... So this whole list of topics, and then also diamonds in outer space back in the news. So all these topics tonight and possibly more. And if you weren't aware, recently, as I said at the beginning, I've been very involved in progressing with the wing generator, and so much going on there, it's just... I'm swamped. I'm just absolutely swamped with good things going on. And some of this will start to come out in the public eye soon. That's all I can tell you. But so many things going on and meeting so many wonderful people and people that are very excited about this and understand what I'm doing. And finally, this is forging ahead. So anyway, it's impossible. It's a moving target because it's moving so quickly. But Tesla charging stations. This is something that really caught my eye, sent in, by the way, by a listener. And there are various types of charging stations. There are supercharger stations. And then I don't know all of the ins and outs of how they classify these, but apparently it's a cost to have access to these. And so when you're traveling, of course, the Tesla Model X or Model S has a pay per usage of the charging stations, but they say that most people charge their vehicle at home. And they have, you know, their daily routine or whatever is within a 300 mile radius. So they come back home and charge their automobile. And then they did a comparison, and this is very interesting, comparing it to an automobile that runs on gasoline. So the average cost per a car that gets 30 miles per gallon, and that's pretty good mileage considering city and highway combined. Not many cars in the city get 30 miles to the gallon. So that's a pretty good automobile that would be getting 30 miles to the gallon. Now, first of all, I'll warn you, this is a little bit deceptive, but when they have the electricity prices at about 12 cents per kilowatt hour, which is probably about what most of you pay at your house, then the mileage comes in on the Tesla cars. It comes in better than gasoline. In other words, they want to keep the cost of driving a Tesla automobile less than the cost of gasoline. But of course, you're not adding in to the maintenance on a gasoline engine, the oil changes, the grease, the, you know, the belts, the all of the other things that plague the gasoline engine. It could give you a lot of extra expense. So what the overall expense is, and of course the Tesla car costs more, and so it's somewhat of an apples to oranges comparison. But in terms of people's usage, once they have the car, then the consideration is what is the cost per mile or the cost per gallon or kilowatt hour, etc. So, but most people charge their electric automobiles at home. And the charging stations, the mega stations and the super stations, I mean, they already have almost 10,000 of these across the country. This is amazing growth, and I'm just somewhat flabbergasted. Musk is just taking off. He's got semi-trucks now that are hybrid electric, but I imagine in some point they will be completely electric, just like airplanes, and I put that in my video. That was released actually a number of years ago when I talked about the wing generator. I talked about electric automobiles, and of course the Tesla Roadster was in road models were very much available back then. Electric motorcycles, electric trains, and electric airplanes. The people that were flying those just loved them, actually very quiet. But also the Tesla batteries, the home power wall, it's called, and it has a power rating of 13.5 kilowatt hours. And so that means that equivalent, and of course there are different ratings, they're usable and real, and they have all these various ratings. But just taking the amp hours or the kilowatt hour rating, 13,500, this would be the equivalent of the amount of power to run 130 100-watt light bulbs continuously for an hour. And that's just a concept. But the average home uses about one-tenth of that, meaning that this battery pack, the Tesla wall, could run the average home, probably not with air conditioning, but the average home for general use, for around 10 hours. Now, that's not too bad, given that this is a very small footprint. It's a very small box that you would put in your house, and it comes with its own inverter for 120 or 240 volts. So it's really an amazingly well-designed package. And these are only going to get better. Now, just a comparison, if you were to go out and buy, let me see, I just had experience with a battery model Interstate. I bought them and I was using them in one of my projects. And I bought a bunch of them to as a battery supply, very available. And but they have a amp hour rating of around 80, which means that the Tesla Powerwall, you would have to buy 162 of the Interstate. It's the SRM 27 is the model. If you're a battery freak and you know you want to know all about this, they don't really rate that battery with amp hours. They rate it in terms of RC, which is a different rating, but it's when you calculate it out, it turns out to be about 80 amp hours for that battery. So it would take 162 of those, and they cost about $100 a piece. So given that, and the Tesla Powerwall is comes in way under this cost figure, you would have to spend about $16,000 for those 162 Interstate batteries, and they're good batteries. It's just that the lithium-ion batteries of the Powerwall, just a lot higher density of power density. In other words, how much energy can you get in that battery per weight, per amount of quantity of weight? And so this technology is just accelerating because of the alternative energy industry, which to date really has been a grand failure. But these technologies are moving forward, and all they need now is the wing generator on a large scale, and we will be running towards home plate on the home run of literally energy getting rid of the central power company. Remember, let me just give you an example, and I like to repeat this because it's so informative. If you took a solar panel and you made it for one penny, that was the retail price, and it was 100% efficient. It converted 100% of the sunlight into electrical energy. So it's 100% efficient, and these are ridiculous numbers. Nobody's going to sell a solar panel for a penny. And, 100% efficient. But anyway, you do this sometimes in physics. You go to the extreme to prove a point or to get an understanding of the physical problem. Now, if you could do that, would that solar panel, if we could just pave the roads and put them on the rooftops and in your backyard and out in the field and along the highways, would it solve our energy problem? And the answer is no. Because still, even given the excellent properties of the Tesla Powerwall, it is not possible to store that much energy and to supply the entire country with that much storage capacity because the sun only shines a few hours of the day. And all the rest of the time, you have to run off batteries. So wind is a much better source, but the three-blade wind generators are just an absolute failure. They don't work. The wind just blows right through them. They're broken most of the time. And they have a motor inside that needs to run to make them turn. So when you see that big field and one or two of them are turning out there, that's because there's a motor inside making it turn. Absolutely ridiculous. So given the state of alternative energy, solar and the three-blade wind generator, they will never threaten the central power company. And that's why Xcel Energy puts them in. That's why California big power companies put in. They love solar panels. They want you to buy solar panels. They subsidize them. They subsidize the installations. Why? Because they want to suck all of that alternative energy money out of the public. They want you to have a bad experience. It's not going to work. And then the central power company doesn't have any challengers. So anyway, okay, well, I should get away from there. But in spite of all of that, there's great progress being made, and the wing generator is going to be there. Someday you're going to see it along roadsides, up on the hills, and you're not going to see hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. You're going to see one or two, and they're going to be beautiful and moving slowly and capturing that lovely wind energy. And just like Trump says, that beautiful, beautiful coal, well, we're going to get rid of that beautiful, beautiful coal. And the coal miners will, just like the smithy, the town smithy that used to shoe horses, we're going to be going away from coal eventually. And so we're going to have to retrain these people, bring them into other aspects of society for employment. But we can't keep burning coal. Okay, enough of that. The Tesla Hyperloop. How could I forget that? I mentioned that earlier. Now, you can go online and see the plans for this. And from what I understand, Richard Branson is teaming up with Elon Musk. And this could be the wave of the future. Japan has rail systems, they say, are always on time. The Japanese train system is never late. They open up, the people walk out, the people get in, boom, they take off. And so possibly the Japanese are a bit more regimented in that respect. They're not that good a driver on the highway. I always kind of try and avoid them if I see, because anyway, they're famous for not really paying attention to other people around them. Let's just put it that way. But that's fine. They're wonderful people. But they live by those train systems in Japan and China. China has good train systems too. But the United States, we have air traffic. And the problem with air traffic is you got to go to the airport. You got to go through, security. It takes a lot of time and energy. I'll tell you, you'd be better off going down the street and have 10 people beat you with a bullwhip. That's what you feel like when you get done going to the airport and getting on a plane and going through customs and, the Homeland Security checkpoint and, take your belt off, put all your stuff in this thing, walk through there, get all your clothes back on, put your shoes back on, keep walking. It's just draining. And so flying someplace, it's, you talk about jet lag just from the time difference when you get someplace. Heck, I could deal with jet lag all day. But the just the operation of dragging yourself and all your stuff into an airport, and all of the inspections, and then go over there, and okay, now you did that, now go over there, okay, now you did that, okay, now go over there, way down the airport. It's not convenient. And then you got to get in this plane, and you sit next to people that, it's like, anyway, whatever. But the Hyperloops are tunnels, and they're going to go much faster, and they're probably going to be a lot more convenient to get on, and possibly people will not be traveling with all this luggage too. That's one of the problems with air travel is, people got to take everything they own with them. You're dragging all these suitcases. Oh my goodness. Just take a little suitcase and you're only going for a week. You're not going to spend your rest of your life wherever you're going in 99% of the cases. But just people take too much stuff with them. Anyway, I'm kind of getting off the topic here, but a Hyperloop, they have it worldwide now mapped out. They're starting to put these in, and high-speed trains is what it amounts to. You get on, zip, you're across the country. 700 miles an hour, New York to L.A., 5 hours, and not that much hassle. And then you maybe call an Uber, or you get a... This is the plan, that the automobiles will show up. You say, okay, I'm going to arrive at this time. You walk out the door. The vehicle pulls up. You get in. It drives itself to where you want to go, lets you off. And that same automobile is being used constantly, cuts down on traffic. So anyway, all of this is coming, and there are places where this already exists. China, Japan, they're already working on this. I saw a show one time. with a woman from China, and they have mega cities there. They have 44 cities bigger than New York City. I mean, can you even imagine that? And some of them they call mega cities, where they have more than 300 million people. They got a lot of people in China. They got to put them somewhere. These are new cities, and the traffic issue is horrendous. So the conversion, if we can go to wind energy, I'm going to say wing energy, get away from that concept of wind, which is the three-blade wind generator, which is a fiasco, doesn't work. The wing power, you know, this world will be a very interesting place in 20 years. And I said on radio shows a number of years ago, I started saying this, in 10 years, you're not going to recognize the world, because the old model of the Clinton-Bush war cartel, you know, where they were constantly at war with people and constantly, you know, embroiled in arguments. And, you know, this, the Rothschild model of banking, which kept these in the CIA with puppet dictatorships and then, you know, change of regime and country destruction wholesale, like Libya or other countries where they, you know, absolutely destroyed entire countries overnight. You know, that business model has got to go. I mean, that's just an insanity. But that's what they were, you know, doing. But that's changing now. And I'm seeing the positive side of this myself, because I'm involved with business people, I'm involved with investors, and there's a feeling, there's like an insurgence of confidence in the people putting money into venture capital and in projects, and these visionaries are just out there doing. You know, the other people that are back there still trying to cause wars and trouble and anxiety and the evening news, people aren't buying that anymore. That old story don't work. And the people that keep hammering on it, they're learning the hard way. They're stupid people. They don't learn. Anyway, here's a story about a very interesting story. In Germany, a town took back its grid. Now, I'm going to ask you a question out there. We've all heard of the grid and about EMPs and the susceptibility of the grid to attack, or, you know, what would happen if we had a solar EMP? Would it knock out the grid? Could we recover? How would we operate in the midst of a total electric blackout? And I've always said that they had this stage. This is one of the deep state last efforts would be to pull the grid. And they were setting up NASA, remember, a number of years ago. That's probably why they pulled me off of Coast to Coast AM, because I was spouting. They would always call me up for a quick interview. Jim, what's going on? We had solar flares today. Does that mean we're going to have EMPs? And of course, I was supposed to say, oh, yes, we're all going to die. And what I said is, this is not a strong EMP. The sun is very quiet. They're blowing this out of proportion. And they're setting up NASA to get this in the public ear, EMP, solar flare. And of course, the Harrington event, these are real events. I was working in a maintenance center for telecommunications, where I was at the time. And we saw a six-state power outage. It started in, guess where? Down in New Mexico, Pahrump, and down in Area 51. That's where it started, oddly enough. But it grew. It went all the way up to Seattle. It took out all those western states when bing, 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 we saw the grid dropping. Never was really explained what caused that. But, okay, back to the original point here. Do you know who owns the grid? Okay, like, let's talk about the telecommunications network. Okay, now we have it split up to where, you know, AT&T owns its own network, Verizon owns its own network. It's like having 10 highway systems for telecommunications, for cell phones etc. And I've said this is ridiculous because each company has its CEOs, its, you know, professional staff, its finance department, its sales departments. And so we're paying for all of this overhead in these corporations. And that's why you're paying $100, $200 a month for a cell phone. You know, that's because it's duplicated about 27 times. You know, you've got lots of smaller carriers that are much more efficient. Okay, so anyway, we know who owns the telecommunications network. And then, of course, the fiber optics, etc. Those are owned entities. But when the public utility commissions spun off the power companies to become private corporations, now the Public Utility Commission used to oversee Ma Bell, you know, the old phone company where everybody had the same phone, weighed about 22 pounds, you'd pick up the black receiver, dial, you know, the dial. That's where you get the term dial tone. Most people now say dial tone, they've never seen a dial. They couldn't tell you what it is. They'd look at a phone. You'd have to teach them how to use it. Dial this, put your finger here, go around there, let it go. You know, that's the dial. We still use the terminology dial tone. But how many people today, living today, never saw a dial phone? Wouldn't know what it was or how to use it. Anyway, the question is, when in the electric grid, we know who owns the highway system, the states, there's the interstate that's federal, there's the state roads, there's the county roads, there's the city roads, there's the, you know, municipality roads, there's the, you know, anyway. We know who basically manages the road systems, but they're public thoroughfares. In other words, you can get on it and go there if you want, and some places charge you. But be that as it may, you can get on the road. There's one road system. It's a one big massive road system, but it's one road system. The grid is similar. We do not have, in this country, individual electric distribution networks like the 15 telecommunication networks, Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, da-da-da. We don't have that for roads. You don't get on a T-Mobile road and drive over to this town, or you could go on Verizon's road, or you could go on AT&T's road. No, we have one road. Okay, so that the grid, excuse me, the electric grid is the same as the road system. We have one grid set up, and you can go online, and we think of a grid as square blocks. And so conceptually, you can think of it that way, but it's not. You can go online and see the grid elements, and it's all mapped out. And there are strange shapes depending on the part of the country you're in, etc. But the grid involves power generation stations. And of course, the case of today, they feed alternative energy into those power stations, and they have the ability to turn them off. But the distribution of power comes out of the central power company. And it goes out down the high voltage lines, or they call them high tension lines. And then they are broken down by transformers to then local distribution. And the reason they do this is because high voltage means low current. For the same amount of power, you have much lower currents. And it's the current, I times R, the resistance in the wire, IR, the product, the current times the resistance, that gives you the power loss. So if you have lower current, high voltage, lower current, less power loss. Simple. And so, so that's the distribution system. Then it comes down to the neighborhood where they break it down to 240 or something like that. That comes into your house. They break it down again to 120. And that's what you plug your toaster into. Okay. So anyway, who owns the grid? Do you own it? I don't remember anybody coming up to me and saying, hey, Jim, you own the grid. You're part owner. Uh-uh. No. This is one of the subtleties of the spin-off when the PUCs let these power companies spin out and become individual corporations that allegedly are still under the watchful eye of the PUC, but that's a revolving door deal too. But it kind of was by default. Nobody really talked about it. Nobody really said, gee, you know, this facility we call the grid, shouldn't this, you know, have an owner? I mean, you're paying for it every month. You pay for it. Just like if you still have a landline phone, you've been paying for that copper wire for the past 20 years, but you don't own it. You keep paying on that that copper wire that goes out to your house, or fiber, whatever it is now, month after month. But you, buddy, don't own it. And that is a bit of a scam. But anyway, this becomes very important when we come to the topic of distributed energy. And can communities like Boulder, Colorado, a lot of friends out in Boulder, and they've been trying for decades to become independent and have control of their own grid system, and XL Energy just keeps fighting them all the way because they know, like this little town in Germany that took back its grid. And it was a long legal process. They were fighting the largest electrical generation company in Germany. And after they succeeded, in the following 2 years, 567 other small towns in Germany followed suit. And they were able to produce their own electricity, 100% of it, and then become owners of their electrical generation facility. This is distributed energy. It's kind of the beginning. But on a small scale, you could succeed. But then, on the other hand, if you're that small and you're segregated, you're divided off from the rest of the world, there's a good possibility that you're going to fail. Because the wind energy, with the three-blade wind generators, they were showing these in the picture, and then solar, etc. There's just going to be times when you're just not going to have power. So, and of course, you could buy batteries. You could buy the Tesla wall batteries, etc. But all of this, all in all, is probably going to, on occasion, leave you isolated. And that gets down to the point of distributed energy. That around the United States as a whole, as a country, the grid system is one. And like I said, we don't have multiple grid systems. You don't see the power pole with two or three. You know, AT&T has one, Verizon has one, T-Mobile has one, you know, or equivalent power companies. No, they have formed a cohesive grid system. And these can transfer power from one grid element to the other. If there's excess in one and the other one over there doesn't have enough, they can transfer back and forth, and they buy and sell. And this is kind of all set up, and the protocols to do this are all automated in a sense. But the power company de facto owns the grid, and you don't, and they control it, and they don't want you to touch it. There's all kinds of false reasoning that they use. Like, for example, ooh, it's too dangerous. You can't touch it. Only our guys can touch it. And that's true. Because you don't want a bunch of yahoos out there plugging in alternative energy while they drop a line for repair and some guy plugs in his home energy device and, you know, kills a bunch of linemen. Not good. So there are reasons why. It, obviously, there are good reasons why they have to be very careful. But they're very protective of something called the voltage. They control the voltage. And so they control the grid and they control the voltage. This is de facto. This is not, you know, and of course they lease it or there's all kinds of, I would say, funny legal business going on behind the scenes. And for the power company to maintain its monopoly. But as they found out in Germany, that is not necessarily the case. And once the town started figuring out how to get the grid back, then they started taking it back and developing their own energy sources. Right now, by the way, Siemens and General Electric, the German government, is investigating them. That's my understanding of the state. As I interviewed Charles Artel on the Power Hour a couple of weeks ago on a Friday afternoon, I was a guest host there. And Charles Artel, I called him up and I said, "Charles, you want to be my guest?" Because we had been talking about other things, including the wing generator and other issues. He's internationally, you know, knowledgeable about many things. So anyway, I said, "Charles, you want to be my guest on the Power Hour?" So he was my guest. And he has been invited to Germany because he had been investigating the Clinton Foundation and the pay-to-play and the fact that they're not a charitable organization. They're not even registered to be one. They don't have taxation forms filed to be one. Anyway, Hill and Billy, you know, they just do things the way, the good old-fashioned down south Arkansas way. You just do it. You know, you don't have to bother with no stinking badges. You just go in there and you just get that charity money and you start wheeling and dealing. Anyway, excuse me. I'm sorry. This world is just too crazy. Anyway, so Charles has been asked by the German government, this is public information, to investigate General Electric and Siemens, the two biggest names if you look at AWEA, the American Wind Energy Association, and who is the top people in AWEA, you will find that it's General Electric and Siemens right at the top of the list. If you look at the Canadian Wind Energy Association, CWEA, General Electric, Siemens. And so anyway, this is a long story. I've talked about this before. The collusion between those companies and bribing countries into installing their three-blade wind generators that don't work, sucking up this tremendous amount of alternative energy money, and then eventually the countries find out that they don't work as stated. And so now they're trying to figure out, well, how did they get all this stuff installed? And they're realizing that the bribes went from General Electric and Siemens, allegedly. I got to say that, allegedly, but you can fill in the blanks there. From Siemens and General Electric through the Clinton Foundation to these foreign governments to get the three-blade wind generators in place. So that was the that was the money trail. Anyway, these towns in Germany now are getting back their grid. So this is a point that I'm bringing up, and it's something that hopefully some other people will take up the torch to here and start talking about this. Who owns the grid? And if the power company assumes it does, and you don't ever ask, believe me, they're never going to turn it over to you, Mr. John Q. Citizen Public, or Susie Q. Citizen Public. They're not going to turn it over to you, and they're certainly not going to come up and knock on your door and offer it to you. I know they haven't come up to my door. Jim, how would you like to take the grid? Would you like the grid? Anyway, that's a very important topic, and it's one that's going to be coming around the block, because now that we have a device called the Mechani Wing Generator that can truly generate power on a scale of the power stations, now we can start to envision, and this is going to be a tough road because there's going to be all kinds of regulations. You can't do that. You can't. Oh, my goodness. No, we can allow that. That would be dangerous. But it's very simple. I describe it in my book, Mechani Wing Generator World Energy Project. That was published in 2009, long before cryptocurrencies or token offerings or distributed energy concepts in terms of paying directly. I just saw another article where they're talking about, in Japan, in fact, they're talking about using cryptocurrencies as methods for people to pay for energy, and it might be like filling up your electric vehicle with electricity, which, by the way, still comes from nuclear power plants and coal power plants. But that's another, when I started talking about the Tesla charging stations, they're talking about energy per kilowatt hour. But what they're not saying is how much coal they got to burn to produce that kilowatt hour. And if you compare that amount of coal that they burn at 20% efficiency compared to gasoline, the Tesla Roadster stinks ecologically. But that will change once we get a wing generator in place where we will be operating these charging stations. And then you'll be converting the wind into moving your automobile around. Okay, so anyway, these are important topics. Really, really, really important topics. Okay, I'm going to jump on to another topic here. Earth-friendly homes. Now, look on the cover of my homepage, jmccsci.com. And by the way, my 15% sale is still there on water filters, 30% sale. I have been so busy, I have not been into my webpage to update the sales page, so the great sale prices are still there. You can still take advantage of those. And my life is calming down a little bit, so maybe by the end of this weekend, I will have time to get in there and change those back to normal pricing. So go in there now if you're interested. Water filter, 15% off the water filter elements, the JMCC GF water filter elements, that all-in-one, you don't need add-on filtration of any kind, etc. It takes everything out all-in-one filter. And also the whole house filters on 30% sale with big discounts when you buy the replacement filter packs all at one time. Okay, so enough of that. Just go to the webpage, I'll describe there. And also the wing generator description there, how you can, a lot of people have written in with, it's really fun discussing with people their particular need, whether it's a farm or a ranch, the need for the wing generator. And so those are coming too, by the way. If I haven't gotten back to you yet, just keep your seatbelt fastened. We're trying to pick the ones that are best to begin with, and then we'll open it up as this becomes a bigger operation. But, you know, we have to be careful. We have to grow within bounds here. Okay, so earth-friendly homes. And this is so strange because in some places, these houses would be illegal because of zoning. You can't build a house in the ground. You got to have it with four walls to make sure you have ultimate heat loss in the winter and ultimate heat acceptance in the summer. Because remember, heat goes to cold. Cold doesn't go to hot. That's a thermodynamic property. And so in the summer, the heat is trying to get in your house, and you're trying to cool it with a very, very inefficient process called air conditioning to keep your house. And all this, you know, this amazing amount of energy that we're burning, a lot of it electric, a lot of the heating in the United States is done via electric. And certainly the cooling is all done via electric because of air conditioning, compressors, etc. And, you know, we're just burning this vast, vast amount of energy when it's not necessary. But like I said, if you went into the zoning commission at your little local municipality or your town or city and said, yeah, I want to build a building, you know, half underground, they'd probably haul you off to the loony bin. You can't do that. Oh, my goodness, no. And so, you know, the whole idea of how we construct and the limitations of construction in modern society, but if you go on the internet and just type in this, say eco earth housing or houses, something like that. Just do a search, eco earth houses or housing, and just watch, I mean, all of these amazing houses that people have built and you know, eco-friendly and low maintenance in terms of heating and cooling. You can heat a house like this with a light bulb. In fact, this is a fact that in a room, if you have 100 people or something, each person gives off the amount of heat of a 100-watt incandescent light bulb. Each body, each adult body gives off that much heat. And so if you have 100 people in a room, that's like having 100 100-watt light bulbs burning in that room. So that's a lot of heat. So if you're going to have air conditioning, you know, you need enough air conditioning and space to cool down that much. You got to take that much heat out of the system. Anyway, but if you're just a family or something living in an eco-friendly house, you know, it's just a wonderful earth-friendly way to live. You could have your horses eating the grass on the top of the roof, or your goats or whatever. So, and saving all that money. We just have to stop using all of this energy. So part of, by the way, the distributed network and part of the idea of having wing generators over-configured so that we always have plenty of energy reserve in the country, that it over-configured, allowing us to, and then also conservation, because I just went around where I am here and putting in all light bulbs, that making sure that the light bulbs are the, you know, 6 watts instead of 60, a tenth of the amount of usage. And that's very important because, you know, it actually, I'm starting to look at a light bulb now or anything else electric as coal. How many handfuls of coal is it taking me to keep that light bulb burning for an hour? Or how many shovelfuls of coal, or how many scoops of coal to run my house for the month? And I'm starting to think in that, and you know, when you think about that, or how many scoops of coal does it take to charge up your Tesla Roadster, or Tesla S or X vehicle? You know, then you start to think, you know, there's a video that I have in my page. I moved it down to the bottom. It's of a coal train that's about 8 miles long. And one train is going full of coal. The other one is coming back empty. And when you see that, you just go, oh, no. I mean, and then you understand that 80% of that is going up as heat energy and not producing a dime of electricity. It's difficult to start. These are reality flashes. These are things that we have to become aware of and have to start curing for future generations. If we keep burning coal at the rate we're burning it today through China, United States, Russia, those are the biggies, and of course Europe some to a degree, this is horrendous. Japan burning coal, and we're exporting coal now from what I understand, which is fine. I'm happy that the miners have work, and you know, but we can transition them slowly as we move to distributed energy. But just imagine, and I say this in the little video of the train there, it's down at the very bottom of my webpage, you'll see it. It's got a like a train, just click on it, it'll play for about 2.5 minutes. But with the wing generator, I only have to produce 20% of the energy burned in that coal train. Just imagine that 20% of the cars, eight tenths of all those cars there are going to waste just because of the physical process of converting to electricity. 8 out of 10 cars go up as heat, and only 2 of those cars out of 10 go into actually producing electricity. This is horrific. And nuclear is equally bad. So the 80% in any system like that is going up directly into the environment as heat energy. But, you know, that's the other thing. The global climate change people never talk about that. They never talk about that. I saw an article where a guy said, oh, we have new supercomputers. Now we can prove whether global climate change is wrong or right. Well, you know, if you a computer isn't a magic box. The computer simply does what you tell it to do. So if you tell it to do something a million times more times per second or faster, it's still going to do what you program it to do. So if you're programming it to cause climate change, then, gee, I bet you're going to get climate change. If you're programming it to, let's just see what happens, that's not the way it works. The people who get the government grants are looking for a result. Anyway, that's another story. But Earth Houses, I hope someday some of you at least have the experience of living in an ecologically friendly environment where we have minimal footprint and the lighting is very conservative and the wind is your source of energy. Just a quick note, somebody sent this in. 64,000 years ago, a cave art in Spain. Now, this was recently discovered. Archaeologists dated this not by radiocarbon dating, but by another technique where the minerals that were calcified on the surface of the painting, in other words, on top of the drawing, the artwork from these primitive peoples, they found that the age of the artwork had to be older than 64,000 years. So that means that Neanderthal man, who they thought previously was ignorant and just basically kind of a mildly advanced ape, had the ability to produce coloration and artwork. And it was pictures with like framing and animal drawings and some other art that they really weren't sure what it was, but over 64,000 years old, which totally destroys the narrative that man originated in Mesopotamia. This is in Spain, three locations in Spain, one in northern Spain, one down in the Mediterranean, and one kind of in west central Spain. Three locations where they found this cave artwork. So very interesting. Once again, destroying the narrative, the evolution narrative that is prominent in schools today. Okay, now here's an article sent in by a listener. I love my listener mail because people are out there digging all over the place. And they find these and send them in. So if you find these stories, feel free to send them in. And then I'll go through these and talk about them on the air. Diamonds, there's apparently seven different types of water ice. And they have found the seventh type of water ice in what they call inclusions. Now, I'm not a diamond expert, but I know enough about diamonds that, in fact, in my book, The Diamond Principle, I discuss diamonds, the traits of diamonds, etc. And, of course, the diamond has a crystalline structure that allows you to cut and polish along certain crystal faces so that you get that beautiful diamond and the internal reflections that give the diamond its characteristics. But when you look into any diamond, it has faults, little fissures, little cracks, and that's just due to stresses, etc., when the diamonds were formed. But these things called inclusions, now the diamond is made under severe pressure. And so there are seven types of ice. Type number one is the kind of ice you have in your refrigerator. You put it in your drink, cools it down in the summertime, and you have an ice cold drink. That's ice number one. And they're based on the pressure that existed when the ice formed, the water molecules formed into a crystalline structure. There's amorphous, and then there's crystalline. And this type seven is the what happens is the water molecules take on various the angle between the hydrogen and oxygen changes and they compress in different ways. So type number seven is the most dense form of water ice, and it's found in diamonds now. They have discovered this, so that's an interesting discovery. But of course, they're trying to associate this with diamonds that would be formed deep under the earth. And as I pointed out before, it's really strange. It doesn't make any sense. They say that the diamond is under such pressure down there that the carbon forms a diamond. But if the diamond is forming in a composite, if the diamond is the hardest material, and the diamond is forming in a structure of material that is less hard than a hardness that is less than diamond, then how can it have the enough pressure? Because the diamond is stronger than the material pushing on it. So it doesn't make any sense at all. Until they discovered that diamonds could be formed if you took a vacuum chamber, equivalent to outer space. You take a vacuum chamber, you vaporize carbon, take a carbon sample, vaporize it in the vacuum, and then send in an electric current. And what happens is it makes these buckyballs, a structure, a crystalline a spherical structure, and then the diamond forms inside of that. And that's that buckyball, that carbon ball, is what gives the tremendous pressure that maintains the diamond while it's forming inside. And so how could we get a type 7 ice in outer space inside of a diamond? Well, if it's around a comet, you know that the comet tail is primarily water. And so it would not be unreasonable to imagine that as the diamond is forming in the buckyball, the carbon spherical structure, that it in fact could then have an impurity of water in there, and under the tremendous pressure as that diamond is forming, the internal pressure is enough to cause the type 7 ice in outer space. And then these fall in, the comet, the comet, in fact, the reason, there's a number of reasons for associating this with comets, that the mastodons up in the Alaskan rivers, the upper side of the mastodon is sprayed with microdiamonds, and there's other, I talk about this in my Nazca Lines paper, how the rocks on the Nazca Plains are peppered with microdiamonds. And so anyway, that's in part two of my Nazca Lines paper. But anyway, diamonds in outer space, and they have discovered stars with rings of diamonds around them. So anyway, I'm just about out of time here. Hope you found this show interesting for March 15, 2018. Remember to go to my webpage, JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo, seven letters, JMCCSCI.com. And remember, the 15% water sale, filter sale is still on there with 30% off on the whole house filters. So that'll be hopefully down by Sunday. So get in there quick if you're interested. Interested in that, JMCCSCI.com. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.